Bears a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure MVP and a Microsoft Azure architect, helping people move to Microsoft Azure and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane.
Contact us by email.
Feedback@needtoknow.cloud. It's your destination for anything Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Office 365.
Hello and welcome back to a Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and it's good to be back on the air after taking a bit of a leave of absence to get these Ignite episodes out to you as quickly as possible. Now, that's the good news. I'm back. The bad news is that, unfortunately, because we've worked Mark to the bone, he's actually expired and passed away. So I don't think he'll be joining us for this episode.
My voice is... Oh, can't use my voice.
I hear some...
Just kidding.
I hear somebody crawling in from the background. Is that you, Mark?
Just kidding. I'm here. Hey, Rob.
How you going?
Welcome back. Good to have you back. I've been lonely. It's been really lonely here.
Oh, I don't think you could be lonely with all your personality, surely.
I've been, like, using these tissues here, just, like, blowing my nose every now and then. Just like, he's not here.
So I can see that you're still taking...
It's gone.
I can see that you've not been taking medication while I've been away, so we'll have to rectify that as soon as the podcast is over.
Well, that's nothing compared to the medication I take when I'm talking to you.
Yeah, and it's called red wine, and I can hear you sculling it in the background, so you need to keep that down, because we have had some complaints about the sloshing disturbing the focus of many people.
Well... And about the complaints about you typing in the background.
Well, I have to do something while we're talking about stuff that's not relevant to me, don't we?
All right, let's move on. So, what episode number is this?
So, we're up to 139. We've been cranking them out, which has been good to see. It's been thank to Mark for obviously putting in the wee hours and making sure that we get these out on time before Ignite. I think that you are soon on a jet plane to the wonderful state of Queensland and Surfers Paradise to enjoy...
That's right. The heat and the conference of Microsoft Ignite. So, it's happening... So we're leaving tomorrow. The flight leaves tomorrow at 5 o'clock. So we're recording this on Sunday, the 12th of February. And by the way, Rob, it's been pretty good having all these presenters on from Ignite as guests on our podcast. But I will say that speakerphones are banned. It's taking me an extra 3 hours to edit these podcasts because the way we record these, and thanks to Zencastr for their services, and it's not costing us anything because it's a free service, and we do have to talk about Zencastr, how good it is. However, it doesn't have the smarts that we take for granted of the echo cancellation and things like that, because it records people at each end individually, and so it records everything, including if somebody's on the speakerphone, like when you talk, Rob, interviewing them, it comes out through the microphone and it records it on the other end. So yeah, no more speakerphones.
So there's no PowerShell that you can use to solve that?
Nope, not at all.
Oh, dear,
unfortunately.
Dearie me, we've reached the limit of your PowerShell capabilities, have we?
Well, unless there's a way to set up a module that hooks into Adobe Audition, possibly. At the moment, no.
All right, so with that informational bulletin out of the way, I'm sure that you're busting to tell people about the latest in Azure, so why don't you kick it off for us?
Heaps of stuff. It's amazing how many news items come past the Twitter sphere when we skip news for about 5 podcasts in a row. But yeah, it all kicks off with Cisco joining HPE, Lenovo, and Dell. So yeah, Cisco have joined the Azure Stack Appliance Group, Azure Stack will be released later this year as a turnkey solution, like an appliance, fully built and configured. You just need to buy the thing and turn it on, and then you get instant Microsoft Azure in your own data center. Cisco and Microsoft have announced that Azure Stack will be offered on Cisco's Unified Computing System, UCS, in quarter three this year. More information on that in the show notes.
All right, so one from the Office 365 sphere, which is pretty relevant considering our guest on this episode. So there are new capabilities with SharePoint Online, team sites, and integrating into Office 365 groups. So SharePoint is undergoing major changes, major updates, which you should start seeing being pushed out to your tenant. And one of these is the very close integration with groups. So think of a group as an umbrella under which you get things like a team site, potentially a Microsoft team, Yammer conversations, all sorts of things. So the idea here is that one of those services that a group now receives is a dedicated SharePoint team site to allow them to collaborate, share news, and publish information quickly and easily. So that integration is now improving. So watch out for that to roll out to your tenant very shortly.
We had a guest on our podcast recently who put a tweet out and said they're jumping ship from being an MVP across to the wonderful land of Microsoft. And she was on our podcast recently. I forget her name. It was
Elaine Van Bergen.
That's the one. And she was talking about Office 365 teams and groups and all that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that one of the big changes that we are seeing with the way that people work, especially with Office 365, is around this group collaboration. So typically people used to work in files and folders. They used to work in their Outlook, so very siloed informational spheres. Now, what we see with Office 365 and the changing way that people work is that they work as a group, which means they need access to SharePoint, to things like Teams for chat, Skype for business. All different services come together as needed and then are removed when they're not needed. So the analogy very much is like a movie where you bring together all the correct players, and then when they're finished, they disperse and go off onto other projects. So change in the way that things are working, and obviously a hot topic because part of that is not only technology change, it's also culture change within the business. So there are plenty of sessions from at Ignite that will cover this, and we certainly recommend that you get a along to those.
Marissa Mayer can turn in her grave because she was a big believer of nobody working from home and everybody working from the office. And this whole point of teams and groups and stuff enables people to collaborate basically anywhere.
Well, it's always been the case with mobile devices, thanks to the wonders of 3G and 4G. So that is an accelerating trend we're seeing, and driven generally by people who want to be able to have more flexibility when it comes to work. So again, I'm seeing more and more people take this up and work in different manners. Also, there is some resistance to the people who are traditionally used to a linear form of work. Comes in the inbox, they deal with it. This is very much working in parallel, which can be a struggle for most people, but I think Microsoft's doing a pretty good job. Still a bit confusing for many people, but having it all under the Office 365 umbrella makes it much easier for organizations to work with.
Excellent. Now, on my side, Microsoft have announced Apache Kafka on HD Insight, on Azure HD Insight. So in case you don't know, HD Insight on Azure is Storm, Hadoop, and Spark. Apache Kafka is a streaming solution for HD Insight. If you thought there was a streaming solution for Azure already, well, you are right. There's Azure Event Hubs, a technology developed by Azure, but Apache Kafka is the open source offering built on top of Hortonworks, on top of the Hortonworks data platform. Azure Event Hubs is used for multi-tenant services, and if you do a comparison from Kafka to Azure Event Hubs, there's some limitations. For example, the message size in Event Hubs is 256 kilobits. That's the limit. Kafka, however, is a simple model. It scales out as you need it. It's a message ingestion service with real-time ingestion. You just point your IoT device to Kafka. Any message from basically anywhere, even Twitter messages, Kafka is all based around topics. There's the producer that publishes the topics. Then there's the consumer that consumes the various topics as well. So there's a little graphic here, which we'll put on my blog site and put a link to that in the show notes as well.
So it's Kafka, not catheter. Is that correct?
Correct.
Excellent.
Correct.
We don't want to get that confused, because that one of those certainly means a lot of pain, as much as I'm aware. So the other thing that from my side I'll mention is that we're now able to implement team flows. So flow is a component of Office 365 that allows automation between services in Office 365 and third parties. Previously, when you set up a flow, it was done under the user who created that flow, which did have some limitations when it came to securities and execution at times, but that has now been alleviated with the preview of team flows. So what this means is that it's not so much tied to a single individual anymore, providing you the ability to create a team flow that multiple people can take advantage of. So another example of the improvements we're seeing with the automation engines that are being built in to Office 365, and again, also are part of Azure. We've got Azure Functions, we've got Azure Logic Apps, we've got Flow, we've got a huge amount of automation, and hopefully everybody's now beginning to take advantage of these, because I think they do make a major difference to the way that your business can function.
You know what? All this automation, we'll never have to get out of bed. Everything will be automated. Like, I know some people's tweets are automated. Emails can be automated. News gathering can be automated. All you got to do is sleep in till, give yourself an extra 2 hours. Roll into work at, you know, whatever time. As long as they don't know that your stuff's automated, you'll just say, you know what, I did this.
Much like the way that I'm doing this podcast right now, thanks to the bot service.
Right, yes, of course. Is that why you are coming across so perfect and not making any mistakes whatsoever?
Exactly. It even spells correctly.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. And I thought you were a real person after all these years.
I'm sure there are many people out there who would prove you 100% incorrect in that assumption. So you obviously need to get your facts correct before you deal with the bot on this side of the chat.
All right, so Microsoft have announced that the Azure SQL Database Threat Detection will be generally available in April 2017. So Azure SQL Database Threat Detection provides an additional layer of security intelligence built into the Azure SQL Database service. It helps customers using Azure SQL Database to secure their databases within minutes without needing to be an expert in database security. It works around the clock to learn, profile, and detect out-of-the-ordinary database activities, including activities like indicating unusual and potentially harmful attempts to access or exploit databases. So it's so simple to use. All you got to do is just turn it on, and you get real-time actionable alerts. There's another graphic there that I'm looking at. It's on the blog site. We'll put a link also to that in the show notes.
So something that's even more exciting than SharePoint, even more exciting than Office 365.
Oh, let me guess. PowerShell.
No, Power BI. Oh. You were close. So Microsoft has announced that Power BI reports can now be integrated directly into SharePoint Online. There is now a a web app that you can now basically embed, a web part that you can now embed these directly into the SharePoint team site. So that means you can spend your time developing a Power BI report and then embed it into your SharePoint Online team site, which again we mentioned can also be part of a group. So that's been a very high requirement from a lot of people that I've come across that want to be able to take the information they create using dashboards in Power BI and embed them into their SharePoint team site. So again, we'll put the link to all this information in the show notes so you can have a look for yourself. But that is really cool. Again, currently in preview and available to Office 365 first release customers, but we should see this roll out to every other customer shortly.
All right, Microsoft have announced the release of a new open source project that enables devices connected to Azure IoT Hub to store the data in a Cassandra database. In case you don't know, Apache Cassandra is a highly scalable, highly performance distributed database designed to handle large amounts of data across many commodity servers, providing high availability with no single point of failure. It's a NoSQL database. So with this new Cassandra connector, developers can easily build solutions that harnesses IoT fleets of devices and store the data in Cassandra tables for later analysis. The available GitHub library can be fully customized if needed. Developers can define a schema of Cassandra tables and specify how data should be stored, whether based on the type of message or by splitting the incoming data into multiple tables for easier analysis. In addition to the Cassandra connector, Microsoft have released a Docker container to narrow down the deployment and testing of the new library to a matter of minutes. More info in the show notes with a link.
Cool. All right. So the last one I've got is that the Azure Backup Service now includes the ability to instantly recover files. So you can restore instantly from the file backup in Azure. Also,
just done it. Just then. Backup? I've just restored my file just then while you said that.
Where's that mute button when you need it? So, what this gives is the ability. Typically, many SMB IT pros use imaging products that allows them to mount a volume and then recover the data directly, just doing a copy and paste. Now, Azure Backup allows you to do that. Again, currently in preview, make sure that you have the latest client on your machine and you'll be able to work with that. I think that's a very big step forward for the Azure Backup service and brings it to par with many of the other commercial services out there. Now, interestingly, I see a lot of commercial services like Veeam, Shadow Protect, Acronis, all these sort of traditional IT backup people now beginning to embrace the cloud, having some free agents that allow you to back up machines to Azure. So I think there's probably going to be a few less backup people around in short order. I think that Microsoft's, again, the backup product's becoming pretty robust and a very attractive option for many, many resellers.
Yeah, and Stéphane Boudot will absolutely love you because he is Mr. Backup and he is all over Microsoft's Azure Backup and Site Recovery. That's one of the many specialties that he deals with every day. So he's all over that, but he'd love to hear that news.
Well, it's good. I hope he's going to Ignite.
Yeah, he is. He's doing a couple of sessions. He was one of our guests. Actually, no, he wasn't one of our guests on our podcast. He will be on the next one. We're talking to Stéphane Boudot.
Isn't that
lucky last?
Isn't that a coincidence?
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't have set it up better, but I did pass the ball to you, and one would say that you may not have caught it cleanly. But anyway, what else have we got?
We've discussed a lot about IoT in this news release. IoT affects billions of devices, generating enormous economic opportunities. Your future career will be hugely impacted by this new wave of innovation. So are you thinking about getting started with IoT development, Rob?
Yeah, why not? I've got not a lot to do at the moment. So yeah, why not add that to the list of the to-do items?
And would you like some help to get your hardware up and running?
Let's take all the help we can get, please.
Or not sure what you really need in hardware-wise for IoT?
Well, I would assume that a Raspberry Pi might be a good start, but what else is there?
Would you like to get your hands on some hardware at a discount or learn about the cloud and IoT at the same time?
I think we know about the cloud, but this IoT sounds interesting. What can you tell me?
Microsoft Hackster? Yeah, the Hackster, that's it. And Raspberry Pi have teamed up to deliver the first ever IoT virtual boot camp. Subsidized hardware, guest speakers like Eben Upton, Zach Zapala, Jeremy Foster, and Adam Bazino, and classes on how to create enterprise-grade IoT solutions from scratch. So hear from live Microsoft IoT experts across device and cloud teams and influential industry leaders as they show you everything about IoT in these workshops and hands-on labs. So it all happens March 28th. 29 and March 30 this year from 7:30 to 2:30 US Pacific time. The courses are broken into three, I believe. The first one is free. The second one is roughly 200. I think the next one after that is about $200 as well. So it's you got to pay a little bit, but I wouldn't say it's expensive. It's definitely affordable. And based on the fact that it is IoT and it runs for a few days, if you could definitely make that, which I know it's overseas, but the videos and stuff will be available online, I'm sure. So there's a link to that in the show notes.
I have a question for you.
Go on.
Can you tell me, and our listeners as well, what is Azure Cat?
Azure Cat is a cat team for Microsoft. They work at Microsoft.
Can I buy a vowel? Can we have some more information, please?
It's the customer
advisory team. That's it.
Advisory team, that's right.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, again, what it gives you is the ability to work with Microsoft and act as feedback advisors to the product team. So we'll put some information about that if you want to get involved in that. Certainly encourage people to do. There's also an SQL cat. Seems to me as though there's going to be cat everything shortly. So we'll put some notes in there and get people started if they want to get involved, because I think that as we see, Azure is, I think we mentioned last time that it's growing effectively. It's doubling every quarter. So certainly a product to get
tripling,
into.
Tripling, quadrupling.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
so
just going great guns.
All right. Anything else on your side? And
one more.
Yep.
Yeah, one more. So Microsoft have announced the general availability, and I knew this was coming. So did you, probably Rob as well, because we're MVPs. We get told this information ahead of everybody else, and we were told this at the MVP summit. But now I can officially say it: the general availability of Azure Managed Disks. So with this, you no longer have to worry about the complexity of storage management. In fact, it wasn't complex for me, but anyway, most people. You don't have to worry about storage as you scale either. So with managed disks, you still have to have the full power and control from what you expect and love with Azure VMs. Managed disks is like a PaaS bridge on top of Azure IaaS VMs. So with managed disks, you can now attach data disks to every instance, and you can create VM scale sets of up to 1,000 VMs, an increase of 10 times. Outstanding. Managed disks free you from storage account scale management. Managed disks are Azure Resource Manager resources and can be fully templated using JSON and support both standard and premium disk types. You only need to specify the size and type of the disk you want. That's it. You can create thousands of managed disks without having to worry about the storage account and without having to specify any disk details. Makes it very, very easy to set up disks now with all of that in mind, because previously you had, quick pop quiz, you had a limit to the amount of disks recommended to put on a storage account. Do you know how many that is?
16.
No.
32.
Well, yeah, close. Premium disks, yeah, it's about 16, but then standard storage, you've got about 40 was the rule of thumb, and trying to work out the math. So it's a 20,000 IOPS for a storage account, and then each disk in a standard storage account was 500 IOPS. So 20,000 divided by 500 was 40. And so that's the maximum amount of disks on a storage account. And trying to know all that sort of stuff when you're setting up your VMs and remember it all, I think the average person was like, oh, too hard, too complex. So yeah, managed disks is now out, and a link to that in the show notes.
Excellent. All right. Anything else from your side? I know that you need to go away and pack your toothbrush and get ready for the long flight to the other side of the world, being Queensland, and enjoying the sunshine by staying inside totally and indulging yourself in Ignite. So what sort of updates and reports are we going to get with your presence there?
Well, the good news is I've got the iPhone 7 Plus, the brand new one, and you know what? I'm liking it for the fact of the multimedia aspect. It's got a really good camera on there. It's got a really good microphone on there, and I've got the app on here, which is called Voice Memos, and if you open it up, you can sort of record voiceovers, even from the lock screen and everything else, and so I could use it as a sort of a roving mic if I wanted to, and record people sort of as I'm walking through the halls of the Gold Coast Convention Center, or on top of that, I can sort of do some high-definition videos, 4K videos from the back of it, and 1080p videos from the front of it. And the camera's really, really good. So,
do you want to tell the ladies and gentlemen what the challenge I set you at Ignite was?
Yeah, to basically find Scott Guthrie, do everything it takes, and to video my experience of trying to find him. So, for example, if I'm walking around the halls of Ignite and I see somebody with a red shirt, I'll get the phone out and I'll start videoing, and I'll run up to them, tap them on the back and saying, "Scott, Scott, Scott." And they'll turn around and say, "Huh? Huh? What?" And I'll say, "Oh, sorry, I thought you were Scott Guthrie with the red shirt," but, you know, stuff like that.
So that happens before the AVO gets placed, does it? So we have a limited time before the AVO comes into effect there. So
it's all good. I'm sure they'll be happy
set,
to...
We've set Mark the challenge of getting some words of wisdom from the man in the red shirt, Scott Guthrie, who is attending the Ignite on the Gold Coast. So let's see how he goes. Wish him luck. If you do see him at Ignite, make sure that you ask him to see whether he has completed the task or otherwise he doesn't get his red wine and jelly beans on his return.
So maybe I'll sit up the front row for the keynote.
Yeah, I think that probably if you had a Windows phone, you'd probably get a bit more attention than taking an iPhone in there, but you never know these days of the enlightened Microsoft.
That's right. I'll just, like, have all the Microsoft apps open on one of the home screens that I've got, the multiple home screens. I'll just have them all displayed there so it looks like a Windows phone.
Perfect. Exactly. Well, there's nothing better for Microsoft than having their software take over somebody else's hardware devices. So I think that would probably really be enticing for the Microsoft people on the stage. Now, anything else we want to cover off? I think we're going to have a lot to cover when you come back with all this wonderful information. So looking forward to that. We thank everybody, obviously, for staying with us and going through all the podcasts. We've been popping them out more or less one a day recently. We thank everybody for their support. We thank the speakers, obviously, for their time, some of them from the US, much like our guest on this episode, Christoph Fissinger, who is a product manager on the Office 365 Groups Services team. So I'm joined by a very special speaker from Microsoft Ignite, all the way from Redmond in the US. Welcome, Christoph Fissinger.
Thank you, Robert, and hello, everyone.
Excellent. Well, Christoph is the man who will be coming to speak to us about Office 365 Groups, the overview, what's new, and the roadmap. So can you give people a bit of an idea what they're going to experience when they come to your session at Ignite?
Sure. So it's basically a three-part to the presentation. First, I'll cover, you know, an overview of what is Office 365 Groups. And I know you guys heard about it a lot in Australia. You know, it's a foundational part to collaboration, where we're using SharePoint, Planner, Teams, Outlook, and more. So I'll talk about why we're making those advancements and how we're seeing the world of collaboration evolve. Then the next part of the presentation is, especially here with an Ignite audience, which is mainly with IT and developer, which is all about administration. How can I govern Office 365 groups and what's available today? And also touch on what we're doing in Redmond to make it even easier to manage and adhere to whatever the IT standards that your company might have. And then the last part of the presentation, which is, okay, I've talked about the why, I've talked about how we're making your life easier to manage it, and the last part is all about how do I start using it. And for instance, I'll talk about, hey, we think you should migrate your distribution list to groups, and also I'll point to additional content on Fast Track to help customers start with their groups journey.
Okay, so just some questions around groups, obviously to warm people up and get them to obviously interested in the session. Now, groups was obviously something that wasn't included initially when Microsoft came out. So it's a relatively new component of Office 365. And since it has come out, it has undergone, I suppose, a number of changes, at least from what I see. It's moved from sort of being a product now to being a security entity. I mean, is that a fair description? Is that something that Microsoft looked at? I mean, why sort of has it changed its what it is over time?
I don't think it's changed and or bad if we miscommunicated it, and maybe blame me since I've delivered past sessions at Ignite. But basically, there's really two pieces to the puzzle. There's Office 365 Groups, which is, you know, an object in Azure Active Directory. Think of it as a membership provider, just as a fabric that's leveraged by Office 365. So that's what we call Office 365 Group. It's not a destination per se. It's not, you know, Robert doesn't go in Office 365 Groups and get work done. Robert gets work done in the individual apps that are built on top of that foundation. And the individual apps, you know, like I say, there's Outlook, there's SharePoint, you know, there's Skype for Business, there's Teams, there's Planner, there's, and so forth. So good point. And we've heard that from other part of the world where people are confusing groups with maybe only the experience in Outlook, which is not the case. You know, there's Planner is built on groups, and Planner is not about email collaboration, even though you can use email collaboration in Planner.
Okay, so one of the fundamental changes that seems to be taking place with products in general, and especially Office 365, is sort of a move away from siloed individual services to, like I said, a group where the idea is you say, okay, I'm a group of individuals who want to collaborate or work together on a project, and for that, we're going to need a SharePoint team site, an email list, a OneNote, a calendar, and all that information. So again, when you create a group, you get all these resources basically automatically rolled out for you, controlled via the membership of the group. Now, the move to that sort of collaboration environment, is that something that Microsoft saw on the horizon and then, you know, went down the group's path? I mean, you're seeing that transition in businesses to this environment where people are working, you know, in these sort of ad hoc teams?
Yeah, you're making so yes to a lot of your points. I do think before I talk about the technology, there's definitely be a shift in the workplace. And obviously, we've seen some trends. We're not the only one. There's plenty of startups that have taken some, that have seen the writing on the wall and some of the changes how you work at a company. And it's interesting because, especially sitting in the Ivory Tower in Redmond, it impacts every region on every company, whether it's large or small, whether you're in the mining, financial, or whether you're government, or even unis or elementary school. It's interesting to see the transformation on just how people get work done and get paid for it has really changed. And you're right. One of the trend is this notion of ad hoc teams. Yeah, historically, you know, let's say I was part of Robert and he was my manager. You know, I would write the one-page memo to make a decision. Robert will sign and maybe another one else, and I would go about doing it. This day and age, some of the industries are so competitive and you need to respond to customer needs so fast that you have some of those ad hoc team that maybe form on Monday and disband on Friday or even quicker than that. So there's definitely a change in how we collaborate. And groups is a step in that journey to address those needs, that it's not just the writing on the wall. It's obviously we heard that from many customers. Like, for instance, an anecdote, it's not an anecdote, but the groups have been in production for 2 years now. And for a while, most of the usage came from education, whether it was from unis or from elementary or middle school. And when we interviewed some of those school districts or unis, what happened? Why did you jump with both feet on this new way of working where it's self-service and I can just get going, whether you're teacher, students, or whatever? And the reason was the ease of use. Like, if you think of education, typically that's a segment where you don't have a lot of IT. Sometimes you don't even have any IT, but yet you do have students day in, day out, and you got colleagues and parents you need to please, and you need to move fast, and you don't have time to ramp up and read extensive manuals on how to collaborate on a file or collaborate on an assignment.
Okay, so obviously groups is used by many organizations, but one of those organizations obviously is Microsoft. Can you give us maybe a bit of insight into, you know, how groups has been adopted or is being used within your own organization?
Yeah, there's actually we did a recording at Ignite in the US back in September on that topic. But typically, to be very precise, the question I get often from customers, especially from IT, is hey, Microsoft, do you empower all the employees to create groups all day long? And the answer is yes. And so, yeah, we've enabled self-service and all the employees at Microsoft can create groups. To answer the question specifically, I think we're representative in some sense of any other organization where there's no such thing as one size fits all. You know, we're still a very email centric organization. And a lot of people use, for instance, groups in Outlook, you know, as a replacement for DL to collaborate on a project or just stay or keep my team up to date. But obviously, we've also seen people using Microsoft Teams, you know, especially a group of developers where you get that rapid fire back and forth on you know, billing code, and you don't have time to send an email. You want that near real time back and forth. And obviously, we are also a big fan of Yammer and Microsoft. And, you know, we use it to engage, for instance, with our CEO, Satya, day in, day out. And he's actually, he uses it quite a lot to make Bing announcements or amplify some of the things that he's said externally, internally. So, you know, again, we're using different part of groups every day to get work done, depending on the need.
Okay, so I mean, you've obviously taken the direction to enable users to give them this ability to create groups and all the services they get underneath it. But on the other side of the coin is this is, I suppose, a bit of a threat in a way to the traditional IT organization that wants that locked down, solid control, and you know, make sure that everything's controlled and password protected and secured. And the groups, these sort of new collaboration tools, seem to be going sort of against the grain. What's the message there for the typically the traditional IT person who's really into controlling the information and the services within their organization?
Yeah, and so Robert, that's pretty much the whole, I got a whole section about that when I'll be in Ignite. And you know, we've obviously a key part of our success has been, in addition to delivering awesome tools for people to get work done, but also always keep IT in mind. You know, that's what made Microsoft Microsoft. So we do have a lot of controls, you know, for instance, from the most basic, yeah, you can disable group creation if you don't want to enable self-service at the company-wide, and maybe you just want to do a proof of concept on maybe only give self-service to marketing or sales or IT, whatever. So yes, we support naming policy. Yes, we support dynamic membership. You know, yes, you can set hidden membership, and we have data classifications, and you can put things on hold and blah, 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 blah. So I'm just talking about some of the things that we've already delivered today, depending on whether your governance and requirements are. And like I said in the intro, there's also a number of other things that we're going to deliver soon that are going to continue to make IT administrator a hero, always on top of things, always a step ahead of their users, and make sure the way their end users are using groups in through all those apps abides by IT standards. So.
Okay, so again, you mentioned there the future of the product. Can you give us any insight into the roadmap? Obviously, we'll be talking about it at Ignite, but I mean, in general terms, you know, where do you see the groups in this general, I suppose, ad hoc collaboration going? What sort of Microsoft's plans or thinking when it comes to these products?
Yeah, so I'll give you a couple pragmatic things that, you know, none of that is NDA, by the way. It's also published on Fast Track. But some of the things that people have been asking since group have been in production is thing that we take it for granted, for instance, if we use SharePoint, things like self-delete. You know, today it's very easy to delete a group. Now, if Christoph deletes a group and there was a document that Robert wanted to keep, but Robert was still enjoying a beautiful summer in on the Gold Coast, then when I delete that group, not only deletes the object in Azure Active Directory, but all the services tied to that group, the planner with all its tasks, the SharePoint site, all the emails, the calendar, all that is gone. So self-delete is going to go a long way in terms of maybe I click delete too quickly and I've got like a 30 days to potentially restore that groups and all its assets. Think of kind of the recycle bin behavior that once in a while we do use, or you know, the ability to recover email or inbox. So that's one that, again, is going to help IT, because today, if an end user can actually delete a group, an owner, and we've seen people calling IT like, help me, I deleted it, and fortunately IT couldn't do much. So that's going to help IT potentially help with mitigating that. The other thing that IT has been asking is, hey, help me groom my Active Directory. I get self-service, I get Haddock, but I also want some, I want to groom the one that I want to decommission the one I longer use. So expiring groups will give you the ability to, for instance, set a time frame, like let's say 90 days. And Christoph will have to reattest every 90 days. Yeah, I still need that group for whatever reason, so don't delete it. So that's just a sample. I mean, there's ever more things around compliance. For instance, we're going to be rolling out next quarter things around deletion and retention policies, so you can retain all the emails and all the content forever, or you can delete it, all the emails and all the content after a certain period of time. So again, those are things that, depending on the industry, depending on the needs, those might be requirements to use groups.
So again, for the really traditional people, is there a message around groups in a hybrid environment? Can we leverage our groups back into our on-prem environment with our servers and what we may have in on-prem SharePoint? Is that possible?
So the only support for hybrid is with when you have mailboxes on the prem. So think of Exchange hybrid. So one thing that I want to be very clear is the master for Office 365 groups is Azure Active Directory. All those objects are born in the cloud and managed in Azure. Now with Azure Active Directory Connect, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but that gives you an ability to do a write back on premises. And we have lengthy documentation on TechNet to potentially, if Robert's mailbox is still on premises for whatever reason, then you can still interact with a group that, let's say, Christoph, who's got a mailbox in the cloud, has created. So there's a number of Exchange community update you need to patch and some configuration, but we get that document on TechNet. Again, just to be very transparent, you know, that support on-premises mailbox, it's not the full immersive experience that you would get if your mailbox was in the cloud. So I want to be very clear in terms of setting expectations that for the immersive experience, ideally, you get a mailbox in the cloud, you get your license to SharePoint Online, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so moving beyond your session, what's your feedback around the Microsoft Ignite events? Obviously, the really big ones in the US, but also the ones here in Australia. Obviously, you're traveling a long way to come and speak and enjoy our lovely landscape here. So, you know, what do you see as the real benefits of attending a session like Ignite Australia?
Actually, I've stopped counting. I think it's my fourth or fifth Ignite. I'm going to have to look at the stats on the Gulf Coast. I think, like, generally, I do have a bias for Ignite Australia. I'll get back to that later. But just going to a conference for us, to me, I find this extremely valuable, not just because I can tell the latest and greatest of what's been cooking in the Redmond kitchen, but really what I get out of it is meeting folks like you, meeting customers, and just hearing the vibes, the good, the bad, and the ugly. What are we doing that's not good? What are we doing that's awesome? Because I love to get that feedback, that verbatim that typically you don't get over email, that you only get when you meet people face-to-face. And, you know, I take that as a program manager and might use that to say, here's why we need to prioritize this development in this next sprint or whatever. So I love getting on the ground and meeting people raw face to face with no barriers or filters, so I can hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. With any event on that same theme, I love the networking. It's always great to see, meet some either familiar faces on influencers, but also meet new people. It amazes me at all those events. There's always new generation of folks that either join the industry or join a company, and it's always great to meet new faces in addition to networking with existing ones. So that's what I get out of that's invaluable, that does require to travel all the way down under. The other reason, obviously, beautiful weather, you know, it's the end of the summer for you guys. And I also have relatives down in Australia. So it's a great way to not only do some work, but also spend time with loved ones.
It's the cheapest way to do Airbnb, that's for sure. Do it with your relatives. So The final thing on the Ignite side of things is sort of what's your top conference tip? What do you think that you would recommend people do to get the most out of the conference? So, for example, we've had some speakers recommend, you know, soft shoes, more coffee, less coffee, notebooks, all sorts of stuff. What's a, you know, a couple of little recommendations you would have for an attendee so to make sure they really get the maximum out of the time they spend at the conference?
Yeah, I think being a long-distance runner, my motto would be pace yourself. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's a long week. There's a lot of sessions, awesome lineup of speakers. I would recommend anyone to not just do back-to-back session. Like, I haven't looked at the schedule, but typically it's like 6 or 8 sessions slots in a day. I recommend alternating. Maybe you see a session and then the next hour, instead of seeing another one, maybe you go try to meet up with some of the speaker or meet up with some of your peers. You know, really work on that social connections, networking, I think to me is a great way to get value out of the conference. I mean, you will get access to all the content and it gets recorded. So that's another reason not to get burnout and slide over those by just doing back-to-back-to-back, where pretty much at the end of the day, you don't even remember what you've learned and what you've seen. It's all blurry. So I definitely recommend, you know, socializing, and there's got to be a little fun in that in addition to learning a ton. I also recommend anyone attending a conference like Ignite to go out of your conference zone. You know, if you're a SharePoint admin, sure, you want to do the what's the latest on SharePoint, or if you're an Exchange admin, figure out what's the latest on Exchange. But I always recommend to go do something outside of your conference zone. Go do an Azure machine learning or Power BI, blah, 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 or Planner. Like, learn something that's completely not in the scope of your job or competency. But I think that's what those big conferences like Ignite offer, where there's so many topics and so many shades of gray that and maybe you're going to learn something. Maybe you're going to hook up with a ex-colleague that's his or her specialty. So that would be kind of my conference tips, in addition to putting your feet in the water and enjoying the beautiful sunset on the Gold Coast.
Excellent. All right. Well, again, we'll round off. Thank Christoph very much for the information and his time. I know he's a very busy individual, and again, making time in his day is much appreciated. If people want to contact you or ask questions or follow up on any of the conversations we've had in this episode, how can they do that?
You know, I'll share my email, my Twitter handle, and whatever means is technically possible. So happy to follow up on whatever questions your listeners have, and ideally even meeting your listeners face-to-face in less than 2 weeks.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure that there'll be a lot of people that will be very keen to accept that information. So thank you very much, Christoph, for your time and the information that you've shared with us. We'll make sure that all the notes and information get put into the show notes for people to catch up with. And again, we'll look forward to seeing you on the Gold Coast. But once again, thank you very much for your time today.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.